Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Entercom Baltimore. I'm Gina Crash here with Dr. Julie Rose. She's the director and curator of Homewood Museum, a historic house museum owned and operated by the Johns Hopkins University. So good to have you here this morning, Doctor. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's great to be here.
So great to have you here. And should I call you Julie or Dr. Julie?
Oh, call me Julie.
Oh, you're so sweet. Already on a first name basis. I love it. And we want to thank Amy Mulvihill, who got us hooked up, Associate Director of Communications and Marketing for the Sheridan Libraries and University Museums at Johns Hopkins University. It put us in touch. And we're really excited to have you. And for those who have never heard of or have never visited Homewood Museum, what is it? Where is it? You know, how could people visit it? I know you always have a wealth of tours and exhibits going on, and we're really excited to hear about that.
Oh, great. Thanks for asking, Gina. That's wonderful. We love the opportunity to share information about Homewood Museum. Homewood is located on the campus of Johns Hopkins University. It's on the Homewood campus, which is on North Charles. And it has been, that historic house museum has been open since 1987.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the museum is located in a federal era historic house that was built around 1801. And what the university has done is restored the house back to its original grandeur. So the historic house is furnished to about 1801, and we look at the first quarter of the 19th century as if the Carroll family, the Connor family, and the Ross family were still living there. And it was the country home of Harriet and Charles Carroll. Charles Carroll.
That's a prominent name in
Maryland. It's a prominent name, was the son of Charles Carroll of Carrollton, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, wow. We're going way back.
We're going way back. So this is early Republic Baltimore history that we talk about. And inside the walls of historic Homewood, we look at what life was like in that time period.
And the relationship to Johns Hopkins University is that not only is it on the grounds, but what else? Is there an involvement financially as well? And how's that partnership
sure.
work?
Sure. Well, Johns Hopkins University has two museums that are part of the Sheridan Libraries, and that includes Evergreen Museum and Library and Homewood. There's also an archaeology museum on campus as well. So the museums are part of the education for our students. Homewood Museum is a teaching museum. So we're open to the public, of course. We're open 6 days a week. But it's also an opportunity for students who are archaeology majors, who are sociology majors, museum studies minors in the Museums and Society program, people who are art history majors and history. It's a variety of humanities students and engineering students as well, material science, use the museum for classes and research. So it's really a busy place.
That's an amazing resource to have. How long have you been with the museum? And I know that your background educationally, this is really your passion. So it's really the perfect job.
So, I think so. It's really a very exciting place. So my background is in museum education. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the field for a while. Previously, I was in Louisiana as the director of the West Baton Rouge Museum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And what I was working on for the last couple of decades is documenting enslaved communities on plantation historical landscapes, and then figuring out how to elevate and expand the historical interpretations of those historic spaces to ethically represent the long silenced populations that weren't talked about.
Right.
So it was what we wanted to do now at Homewood was to expand the interpretation to include the voices and the historical representation of the enslaved community.
I'm so glad that you did launch that new tour that includes more details, not only about the Carroll family, as you mentioned, but also about the enslaved families and individuals who worked for the Carrolls. So why was it important for the museum to decide to expand that narrative that it was telling and continue to be more inclusive and adapt to telling that complete story?
That's a great question. Thanks, Gina. I'm really glad that we have a chance to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a national trend that's been happening easily for a decade to two decades, where history organizations are recognizing the need to talk about difficult histories.
Mm-hmm.
And that in order to be inclusive and address relevant history, to use your term, we need to be relevant to the full breadth of the population of our communities. So to only be talking about the slaveholding family stories, while interesting, it's exclusive. It's not really talking about who we all are as Americans.
That's right.
So this trend has really gained a lot of momentum, especially in the past 10 years. So you'll see well-known historic sites like Mount Vernon or Montpelier, mm-hmm. Many of them here in the Virginia and Maryland area. Where I'm from Louisiana, I could speak firsthand, are really working hard to document the historically enslaved populations and free people of color populations that hadn't been part of the interpretation or the tours or the exhibits previously. So this is something that's happened nationwide. And for Homewood, it's really important to show why our historic house is important. Why is it important historically and significant? What's the value of a historic house that's just so beautiful and so well furnished and appointed and so carefully researched if we don't know about the stories about the people who live there?
Yeah, and you've really expanded that. I'm looking at a Johns Hopkins press release, New Hopkins Homewood Museum Tour to highlight the truths of slavery. It says inclusive tour to cover enslavement resistance, domestic violence, and more. And I think you're handling this in a really important way.
It's really important for Homewood and all history organizations to really take into account the challenges of interpreting a difficult history.
Yeah.
We have to be careful not to sensationalize the histories.
Right.
When we talk about violence or abuse or addiction, mm-hmm. Or alcoholism, for example.
Which are all things on this program that we talk about in different ways. And, you know, to know that that's been around for so long that, you know, we still have so much work to be done. Yeah. So many stories to tell.
The story of slavery is just one aspect of oppression that is part of the historical interpretation. But those other oppressions that we talk about, that you said are even happening today on your radio programs.
Absolutely. We're still having those conversations.
Yeah. So from 200 years ago, you know, misogyny and aspects of a patriarchal system and talking about alcoholism help us understand that the Carrolls and the Ross family and the Connor families were real people dealing with real problems that we can understand today. I think it makes the house more... Yeah, sympathy. So I think it's about empathy.
Empathy. Yeah? That's
right?
The word.
Okay,
exactly.
So we're thinking about why is Homewood House important and relevant? Because it speaks to real human issues, real public health issues, and family issues that are important to us today. And if we can reflect on how these are real people that we're interpreting at the historic house from 200 years ago, that kind of empathy starts to emerge as you're on the tour. Like, you're thinking, wow, I can understand that those are issues that are in the paper or in my family or my community too.
So that must be a huge thing to, you know, to prepare the tour. When did you know that it was ready? You know, was there something that somebody brought up to you that you hadn't thought of that you're like, oh, now it's done? You know,
Well, Gina, you know, it's always going to be a work in process because history is fluid and we're always learning new information and new questions are always being raised.
That's
people
true.
Are especially interested. For example, I have students right now who are doing visitor studies and surveying what visitors think of this new tour. And we're taking that information finding out what are some of the issues that we need to clarify. What are some of the things that maybe are difficult to take in such a short period of time. The tour is about an hour. But so you asked, how did we prepare ourselves?
Yeah.
So Dr. Abby Schreiber was hired as our as historian to consult on the project. And she conducted 3 years of history research to document the enslaved community at Homewood.
This was all going on behind the scenes, which was only going to make it even better in the future, what her findings were.
Gosh, she started working on this project probably around 2015 with a grant from the Maryland Historical Trust. Mm-hmm. And she worked closely with my predecessor, Catherine Arthur, who was the director before I came on board in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to ask how long you've been there, 2017.
Yeah,
excellent.
Not all that long. And also with Judith Prophet, who was also with the museum for several years as the membership coordinator, but she also was really interested in researching the history. So it was a collaboration of some really great talent that was able to document that historical community. I came on board as a museum educator, was a nice way for me to segue into the work here at Homewood Museum to think about how do we take these stories and work them into the narrative for a historic house that hadn't talked about that
That's
before.
That's right.
So it was really important to sort of take a step back and think about why these beautiful rooms, a dining room, a drawing room, a guest bedroom or a master bedroom, can be rethought in terms of workspaces and family relations,
mm-hmm.
And being a parent. There were three women who gave birth in that house.
Oh, wow.
Right? So Harriet Carroll had seven children, five who she raised there. Becky Ross, an enslaved housekeeper, she had two children there. And another woman by the name of Sis Connor had six children there. So there were three pregnant women in this house in the time period that we interpret,
wow.
with a lot of babies in the house.
Yeah.
So just thinking about that aspect.
How did that work, even from
yeah.
the medical aspect to, like, I'm glad everyone was okay. That's
right. And how did the enslaved women care for their children
right.
when they were
for Harriet's children of
the slaveholder?
Right.
So
right.
thinking about that dynamic really adds another layer of complexity to the tour and the story that visitors are being asked to think about. Yeah, change the sounds that are happening
yeah,
in the house.
Fascinating.
Who's interacting with whom?
Yeah. So what are some of the things that people are going to hear on this tour, which again you say is about an hour, so that's it's like action packed for an hour.
You know, so one of the when I first came on board in 2017, I had asked a variety of different stakeholders, from visitors to people who work at the museum to volunteers and board members, what's the rock star object at Homewood?
Right. That's a great question.
And you know, the overwhelming answer was the historic house itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so given that sort of as my marching orders,
yeah.
I used the historic house, the architecture, to move the story. We take our visitors through the house, going from the service wing through the entertainment block, which is the most elaborately decorated and furnished spaces, into the private quarters, the master bedroom and the guest room and the dressing room. And in those different spaces, we talk about the work life that was in there, the family life that happened, and then we also talk about the furnishings and the architecture. So using all that information, we blend it in such a way that you're learning about the Carrolls, the Rosses, and the free slaveholding Carroll family in the context of their work and their families.
So how's the reaction been so far to all the voices that you hear? And thank you for listening to them, because you know that your supporters and your everyone's a part of Homewood Museum. You know, you don't do it alone, for sure.
Yeah, so it's really important to be sensitive. It's important to be sensitive to our visitors so that they feel that that they are learning information that they expected to learn. So we're meeting expectations, but we also want to provide new information and raise new questions that they hadn't thought of, sort of expand their ideas after leaving Homewood. So our students, I have a museum education class this semester, and the students have been interviewing visitors at the end of the tour to ask what they thought of the tour. And what we're finding out is visitors really are eager to learn more and more about slave life. And so it's not a story that visitors are hesitant to learn about. Not to say that it doesn't affect people emotionally,
right?
But
right.
What I am saying is that they are very interested in learning about slave life. So on tours where there is maybe less information than they had expected, the visitors are telling the students in the interview that, oh, I really have more questions, or I really wish I had learned more about the Ross family experience when they were emancipated. And so that's really
yeah.
helpful to know.
That's great. And as a museum professional and academic professional, too, you've always specialized in that difficult history. How did you get into that line of work?
My interest in telling difficult histories started when I was working at a children's museum, actually,
mm-hmm.
in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And Oak Ridge, Tennessee is one of three secret cities that was part of the Manhattan Project, totally different part of history, so we're talking about 20th century now.
Right, right.
But at this children's museum, as a education curator, I was tasked with interpreting the Manhattan Project. So how do you describe nuclear war or the threat of war to young children? So that was when I first started thinking about
teaching difficult
history.
Yeah.
So the name of that exhibit that I was able to curate there was called Difficult Decisions. Then I started working at Magnolia Mound Plantation, which is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
and a beautiful accredited plantation landscape with a historic house that was interpreted exclusively and not to the museum did not interpret the enslaved community, mm-hmm. but they in 1998 they brought a slave cabin onto the museum campus, and I was tasked as the education curator to interpret the slave cabin. But in order to do that, I had to document the enslaved population to know the true stories, to be historically accurate.
That's right.
And that's how I really got involved with recognizing that across the country, stories of enslaved populations at plantations and history museums were not being told. And it was at that point in the late 1990s that I got very invested in researching about how do we ethically represent enslaved communities.
And now fast forward to today, and that's what Families at Homewood, the tour is all about, right?
It is.
Where it began and how long it took to get there. And we're blessed that we have it here in our backyard, too. Because I also want to talk about another, The Many Faces of George Washington is going on now.
It's running now.
And we've got through March 21st, so nothing like a deadline to get the job done. So I want to make sure people don't miss that as well. So tell us a little bit. I'm sure you had a hand in that as well.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I had the pleasure of working with our assistant curator on that exhibit. Her name is Michelle Fitzgerald, and we're delighted to have her on staff. She joined us. Yeah, she joined us within this year.
Awesome.
Yeah, The Many Faces of George Washington is on loan to Homewood Museum from the Gilda Lehrman Institute for American History. And it was originally curated. It's a traveling exhibit. It was originally curated. It's a panel exhibit from Mount Vernon, the ladies of Mount Vernon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so what we wanted to do at Homewood with the panels was expand the storytelling, to expand the history of George Washington, thinking about him as a soldier, as a statesman, as a president, as a patriarchal figure, to think about him even more robustly. And so what Michelle and I were able to do is that we dug into Hopkins Special Collections, and we were able to find original George Washington documents,
wow,
which are wonderful to see.
You have such a treasure trove.
It's incredible of resources that we have at Sheridan Libraries. And we also borrowed materials from Evergreen Museum and a variety of other places, including the Flag House Museum.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and some other wonderful museums to pull together stories through material culture. So we have an opportunity to think about also George Washington as a slaveholder at Mount Vernon, to think about him as a frustrated commander in the army.
Mm-hmm.
Everything wasn't easy. So we have a letter that he wrote to General Lund talking about his frustrations and not having enough money or not having enough supplies or his soldiers not being trained well enough for what was happening in Harlem and New York at that time. So it's really a wonderful opportunity to disrupt the narrative, sort of the smooth narrative you might learn in school.
Yes.
And think about Washington again in terms of him being a real person, mm-hmm, with real challenges.
Well, that's fascinating. And you also have other things I know that you wanted to talk about coming up in the year. I mean, your calendar is vast and other things. Once you wrap up The Many Faces of George Washington, I know you have a lot of other events that you're looking forward to at Homewood Museum this year that are still coming up people can get involved in.
Absolutely. So in honor of Women's History Month, we have a lecture called Black Women in Slavery's Archive, Silence, Resistance, and Resonances. And the speaker is a history professor. Her name is Dr. Jessica Johnson, and she will be speaking on March 13th at 5:30 to 7:30. We'll have wine and cheese to start.
Very cool.
So that everybody get a chance to, or hopefully everyone will have a chance to meet Dr. Johnson and talk to her a little bit before we start kick off with the lecture. So that should be really exciting, extremely interesting. Her work is very exciting. She's an incredible asset to have.
Yes.
Right around the corner, being on campus, like two buildings away.
And yeah.
Dr. Johnson actually came on the tour of Families at Homewood when we were testing it.
Ooh.
We had done focus groups last year to get some feedback before we launched it fully this year.
You fully thought this, mm-hmm, out, yeah.
And so she was one of the individuals who came through and gave us feedback, and then she actually read our exhibit script, which was wonderful. And that's how I got to meet her and got to learn about her research. And I was so enamored with her work, I invited her to be our speaker for Women's History Month.
And I know you guys host events as well that people can do. Can they help volunteer if this is a passion of theirs as well? You know, students are thinking this might be something they might want to do for future Dr. Julie Roses out there, future curators and directors of Homewood Museum, you know.
Well, certainly. We absolutely welcome volunteers. In fact, volunteers are a big part of what moves Homewood forward. Volunteers are our heart and soul of what we do, as well as our membership.
Mm-hmm.
So people are welcome to call us at Homewood Museum if you're interested in learning more about volunteer opportunities. We have a very dynamic and exciting docent program. Docents are individuals who are volunteers mm-hmm. that give the tours. And we do training sessions. We have bus trips. We have programs. We have special lectures just for our docents. So it's a really nice opportunity to be social, but also to contribute to the community.
And you guys are you're all over. You mentioned the phone number, which is 410-516-5589, right? And you're online, museums.jhu.edu.
Yes.
And you can find all the wonderful properties there. And you guys are very active on Facebook and other social media as well. And again, if you go to that website, you'll see all the direct links there. And that's fascinating, too, to have younger people get involved in the history.
We do. We already do. It's a very diverse group of folks that are volunteering at Homewood. And so we have students. We have graduate students. We have people who work during the week, so they opt to volunteer on the weekends. So we have a really nice, diverse group of volunteers that we really enjoy.
But I know you had free admission February, and you do other kinds of inclusive things. And the admission is not expensive to begin with, but the fact that you did something really cool that I'd like to shine a light on in February for families.
Thank you. Yeah, so because we were launching Families at Homewood, which is now the tour for Homewood Museum, we really wanted to include as many Baltimore and local people as possible to come so we could get their feedback to see what they think about the tour and give families opportunities to come to Homewood who may not have thought about coming to Homewood before. So we really got a tremendous amount of visitation, which we were delighted to have. We had, I want to say we had twice the number of docents on duty.
That's great.
During the month of February. So it really... it was very encouraging to know that the community supports what we're doing in terms of transitioning the meanings of Homewood. It's not to say that we're not continuing to collect incredible furnishings and artifacts and examples of Baltimore and New York and Philadelphia furniture. We have an outstanding collection. But it also means that the visitors are really hungry for stories about the people, to be really accurate and to be sensitive at the same time about
yep.
the stories that happened at Homewood. So yes, we were able to be free for the month of February. Families at Homewood continues now year-round. We're open Tuesday through Friday from 11 to 4, and then on Saturday and Sundays from noon to 4. And if individuals are especially interested in learning about the ties of Johns Hopkins University to Homewood, we have a tour called Hopkins History. So we can specialize if you're interested in that story. We are also able to talk to individuals who are especially interested in the decorative arts.
Mm-hmm.
So I do, Michelle Fitzgerald does a wonderful tour looking at the decorative arts at the historic house at all over the museum.
There's so many things to check out.
There are.
Wow. And all of that stuff is going on. And again, also the Many Faces of George Washington will be running through March 21st. What about traditional beverages? You caught my eye here, 2019, yeah. Celebrating rum. Hello, save the date. What's going on with
that? Yeah, save the date, May 30th. This will be the 23rd annual event. We call it a traditional evening of beverages, traditional beverages, and this year we are celebrating or looking at serving rum. It's an evening of traditional beverages, and each year Homewood selects a Maryland beverage. Last year we looked at bubbly, and the year before that we looked at rye,
how
and
could
so
I have
on.
Missed this?
How did you miss that,
before
Gina?
Before I miss another one, I got to get on board with rum.
Rum. So we're going to talk about rum, and of course, the Caribbean was the source of molasses that was sent up here to Baltimore, where rum was made, and among other spirits.
Other fine spirits.
And other fine spirits. And this year we're going to hold the event in Mud Atrium, which is a beautiful space. We're going to have Calypso music. We're going to have a speaker talk about some historical aspects of rum.
Oh, cool.
And then there will be different distilleries from Maryland who will have samples, and you can try a variety of different rum drinks and talk to the distillers about their products. And then we'll have some lovely refreshments too that will be available. So you want to save the date and check out our website, and we will be posting, and also on social media.
Oh, for sure.
Certainly on Facebook and Instagram and a lot of other resources that we'll be putting more information about how you can get your tickets It's a very exciting event every year.
So save that date for sure. Traditional Beverages 2019, all about celebrating rum. Dr. Julie Rose has been our guest, the director and curator of Homewood Museum, a historic house museum owned and operated by the Johns Hopkins University. And oh, another important note to make is that you are completely, Homewood Museum is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, right? And that means donations are always important, whether it's a donation of time, financially. That's an important point to make, right?
It is. A membership is a big part of what we do and helps us keep the doors open. So we do encourage members to join and continue to be a part of the museum community. Membership, you get to go to all of these wonderful lectures and programs. You get a discount at the gift shop. You get to have ticket discounts on all of these lectures and programs. You get also the first notice, so you get the opportunity to sign up first. If you're a member.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you get mailings and invitations to our receptions for the exhibit openings. So there's a lot of wonderful benefits for membership.
That and all that can be found about Homewood Museum online, museums.jhu.edu on social media, Facebook, and I'm trying to read that icon, but I think Instagram too, right? Yeah, because I follow you. And honestly, you guys post the most relevant things. I swear I check almost weekly, daily to see what you have going on.
Well, we can thank Amy for that.
Amy,
she works
yes.
really hard on helping Homewood.
Amy Mulvihill, Associate Director of Communications and Marketing with the Sheridan Libraries and University Museums at Hopkins and Homewood Museum. And she brought us together this morning,
she
Dr.
did.
Julie Rose, once again, Director and Curator of Homewood Museum. It was so great to have you here this morning. We look forward to seeing you in action at Homewood Museum. And everyone listening, if you need any more information, you can find me on social media everywhere on all the platforms at Gina Crash. I'd be happy to put you in touch with Julie and Amy and everyone at Homewood Museum. Thank you guys for listening. This has been a production of Entercom Baltimore.